Let me go ahead and introduce myself for a minute. My name is Wouter van Vught. For the Dutch guys, easy. For the non-Dutch guys, a little bit more difficult. Can make bad jokes about my name. Will not do that. Inappropriate. So that is something I'll just stay clear from. I work with Critical Path Training, doing a lot of SharePoint evangelism, SharePoint training, and I do consulting out of Holland. I'm focused quite a bit on OpenXML, already since the advent of OpenXML, since the early betas, when it was still, first of all, an ECMA standard, and later on, of course, ISO standard as well. And I think definitely OpenXML is a hugely interesting topic for any company there, right? If you take a look at what everybody does, we all need a place to, well, basically store data. And typically, you put it in a database. If it's really structured, then you, of course, have a lot of other data. We call them documents. You call them emails. You call them whatever form you have. And, of course, the programmability of that information is quite important, right? There's a lot of information contained inside documents. And historically, it has been quite difficult to get to that data and operate on it and basically build solutions around that. And of course, if you take a look at the whole world of OpenXML, what we could now start to do is we could start to take a document and we could start to develop that. So how many of you, just from my perception, to see what kind of people I have in my crowd today, how many of you consider themselves to be developers? Okay, that's good. So a lot of developers, I like that. Got a lot of code for you, so that's a good matchup, right? And how many of you have worked with OpenXML before? That's a little bit less, but still quite a few, so I'm still happy to hear that, because I do see that, well, the adoption of OpenXML and the way in which you can work with that is becoming easier and easier, so you see also the adoption rising, and that's definitely an important aspect, because today, of course, I'm going to show you how to develop documents, what OpenXML is all about, and how we can take basically what you do with OpenXML one step further, a step that historically was difficult to achieve with, 2007 technologies, and that is to take a document and move it out of your computer into a printer to send it into a client, for instance, using normal postal mail, right? That is typically a step that you could not really achieve, well, outside of doing some funky things with Word that we're going to take a look at, well, basically right now. If you take a look at document automation, you have, of course, two sides to automating a document. First of all, you need to have a template. That's easy. Open up Word, create a template, do stuff with that. And of course, Word has got all kinds of interesting facilities to enable you to work more easily with a template. I'll show you some of those technologies in a minute. Content controls. We used to have custom XML mapping, but there's a little bit of a sensitive story going on over there. I don't know if you heard about that one, but a little bit of licensing issues, I believe. But we, of course, first need to have a document. We need to be able to go ahead and put stuff into that document, like embedding data. You might want to extract some data. But then we have the next step, and that is what typically people want to do. They want to have a full-on automated document process where, for instance, the client goes to a website, places an order. So now you know that it's, of course, already a workflow. So you would like to take that workflow, take a template, push that information about that order in there, generate an invoice, print out the invoice, and push it to the client, fully automated, right? That's what you would like to do. And here's the fun thing. If you take a look at how you can do that, so let's take a look at how you would traditionally do that using, well, basically current technologies. And if you take a look at these current technologies, they, of course, have, well, some issues in, well, how performant and how well they operate. So I've got this small demo over here. It's called Word Automation. And what I'm going to basically be doing is I'm going to take some data and I'm going to push it into a document. And basically, I'm going to take that document and convert it into a PDF. And the PDF can, of course, then be printed. So let me first go ahead and show you a little bit about that document. It is a normal docx file. So here is my document. It's an invoice for Contoso. Actually, I'm on the Wingtip server, but hey, you know, that's what happens with these demo documents. They always mix and mash into the wrong companies, and it's even on the same address as Microsoft. It's really strange. It's the same headquarters, perhaps even the same boss, right? So what you have here in this document is all kinds of areas where you can start to fill in code or fill in data, and basically that is denoted by using a technology that was available since Office 27 called Content Controls. And I think that was a very huge investment in terms of productivity of developers building documents, right? Because historically, if you want to know where you want to place some data inside a document, you want to push out, for instance, an address or a name into the right location, you either need to know the exact location in terms of paragraphs and runs and stuff like that. So you can say, well, the third paragraph, that's the customer name, so let's just navigate to the third paragraph using XML technologies and push out a customer name in there. And of course, if you change the template, you need to change your code. And well, if you forget to change your code, of course, solutions start to fail. And that's, of course, not that productive. So to work around that, people would typically use bookmarks, right? How many of you are using bookmarks to denote areas in documents where the important bits lie? You see a lot of that happening, because that was basically the best technology that you could use for that. But the downside, of course, is that you're using bookmarks for something that they're not designed for, right? Meaning that if you now want to use normal bookmarking, you'll have issues. And the amount of metadata that you can push into a bookmark is not really that high. It's a bookmark. That's it. If you want to say, okay, but people cannot edit this area if they open it in Word, well, you cannot say that. It's a bookmark. You can do, of course, all kinds of document locking inside Word. That's, of course, a capability that you do have. But the difficulty of implementing that is, of course, much higher than, basically comparing that to content controls, which are basically just areas inside a document where you can very easily use a single line of code to go exactly to that place in the document where that information is supposed to sit. And if you change the template around, of course, that location changes with that. And basically, the way in which it works is that under the covers, these document tags both have an ID value. And if you open up your developer tab and you select a content control, go into properties, you can also see that they both have a title and a tag. And of course, typically you would use a tag to go ahead and find it using technical means. And you use the title to go ahead and make it pretty for users who like to see spaces between words, the non-developer types. I don't like spaces in words. I like dots and I like underscores, and that's about it. But normal people do need spaces and interpunction and stuff like that to actually go ahead and make it readable, right? And also features like cannot be edited, cannot be deleted. Very easy to do because it's also metadata on that specific, element inside your document. So you can easily go ahead and toggle that using both the UI and Word, as that you can do that using, automated technologies, of course. So if I go ahead and start to automate this document, what I'm going to do here is I'm going to fire up Word. So we're going to use COM to basically open up Word. And we're going to use Word to navigate into the right ranges. So first of all, I'm going to open up AdventureWorks. And next, I'm going to start to query all the different orders that I have. And for each order, I'm going to go ahead and open up a document template, copy that out. And next, I'm going to dive into all content controls. And I'm doing the matchup based on the title, not on the tag. But hey, it's a demo, right? So you may want to use the tag for real implementations. I'm going to swap stuff out, and basically in the end, I'm going to say, okay, you can go ahead and save it out as both an OpenXML document and as a PDF, right? So this would typically be how you would program documents if you want to go ahead and convert these into PDF. So let's go ahead and give this one a go. And we can see Word opening up, and you can see it's starting to churn. So it's starting to fill out stuff for me. So it goes into the database, it has my orders, reading it out. There we go. So you can see it's all happening quite well. So it's not, there's no big issues here, right? It's working. But of course, if you take a look at what this is all doing, first of all, it's not really that fast, right? It's actually kind of slow. Of course, we would not show the UI, you would have less rendering, so it might be a little bit faster still. But it will never really become fast, because if you take a look at what's happening, basically we have this document, OpenXML, that we can program. And now we load it into Word. And inside Word, there is no more OpenXML. They, of course, go ahead and transform that, load it in, into in-memory structures. And then, they need to do all kinds of hefty translations and all kinds of interesting things. And then, of course, we have a document that we can attach to and work with. And then later on, you need to convert in-memory stuff back into XML. Kind of a painful, process that takes quite a bit of time to go ahead and do. And if you take a look at what you can now do using OpenXML technologies, I have a browser here where I have basically the same demo. I have a document library containing folders which are currently totally empty. So that's my docx, that's my PDF. And I've got a web part over here, and that web part basically allows me to pick a month, and I'm going to go ahead and say, start pushing out a bunch of invoices for me. And Well, we can leave this one run as well, but just to give you a small sense of speed, if I take this URL and just open another tab and go into the docx folder, you can already see how many documents we have now generated within just like that. It's just no effort at all. Of course, if you take a look at my PDF folder, that PDF folder is not quite filled yet because the conversion into PDF is actually scheduled as a job, so I haven't really created any code to say, do the conversion now for me, please. Go ahead and start doing that. But I'll go ahead and give that one a go in a second or two as well. As soon as this request here actually completes, I'll give this one a go to convert it into PDF, and you can see the speed on that as well. See, if I now just go ahead and go back into Word, which is still churning along and is still doing its thing, I'll just go ahead and give you a notion as to why it is also difficult to do this through Word and why it's not supported. So basically you do this, So it's very easy to break automation of Office because it's a normal application. It's a UI app. It has stuff like threading and you have the UI thread. And if you go ahead and show some UI, well, that thread is now doing the dialogue, so it's not doing any word automation, right? And of course, my code doesn't expect that, so it fails. And if you take a look at what people are investing in, there is, of course, the definite need to convert stuff to PDF, right? There is no two ways about it. People need to do that. So what are people typically doing? They install Word on the server, like this, automated using the COM stuff that I'm doing, just like that, perfectly sensible. Not supported, notably, of course, because Word is a client app, not a server app. But hey, they say, well, okay, we'll do it without support then, because we still need to do the conversion. But it's also something that is very buggy and breaks quite easily. So I had the opportunity to see a company where they had a whole room of servers, 100 of them, and basically they have people walking around, and as soon as this happens, they reboot the server, and then it continues again. Just to go ahead and maintain their need of conversion. So Word can convert like a document in like 20 seconds or 10 seconds or whatever, and they have so many documents that they need to generate that, well, basically they needed to have a whole server farm to do that in, and next you have a whole bunch of people to go ahead and ensure that the farm actually stays alive and doesn't die down after like a day. So that's, of course, going to be a bit of an issue. You can use the object model to stop most of these dialogues from appearing, but of course, is there a guarantee that you'll stop all of them? Well, no, probably not. And still, it's a UI app. It's not a client app. It's not a server app. It's that's it. So you should probably not be using this, right? And in terms of having different choices than Word, not a whole lot. Because, of course, it's all about the fidelity, right? How nice will it look? I can prove to you that it actually did do some conversions, because if you take a look at my bin and debug folders and stuff like that, we can go over here, we see the output. So here I have both, well, a single document which was generated, and we have the corresponding PDF as well. Don't put it in.
No.
PDF, it's a document, right? Okay, that's some misconfiguration on my machine. I do have PDF installed. So there you see the same document. So that's Orlando Guy, and we can go over here and we can say that's Orlando Guy as well. So it's the same thing, it did work, but just not very stable. So this is basically a little bit of the frame of what we will be covering inside this session. How can you do the same thing, but then truly productive and absolutely working and not, well, basically a little bit funky like what you're seeing right now. So here I have a whole bunch of documents generated. And I'll just go ahead and hit off my timer job because this conversion is actually scheduled, so I can go ahead and, well, go ahead and make you feel like it's not scheduled, but actually going to go ahead and run the timer job, and then you'll be able to see some documents appearing inside this library as well, at least if I didn't kill the request of just now. But, well, then you just have to believe I'll convert a bunch of documents for you later on anyway, right? So this is going to be the framing in which we will be covering in this session. How to, first of all, automate a document, how we can push data in, and how can we then convert it, and how can we mix and match that using other rich technologies such as Excel services. And recently, I've been working with a company where they need to have a document management system, and one of their needs is the following. It's not even a strange one. They want to have search and then want to have the first page of a document appear when they go ahead and have a search hit. So what do you need to do? Well, you need to render that document, right? And preferably, Not on the client, otherwise you might as well have just opened it up in Word, so there's no benefit there, you want to do it server-side. And I had the opportunity to install a few technologies of competitors of the stuff that I'll be showing you. And do you know what they did? Install Word on the server, that's one of them. And the other one was install OpenOffice on the server. See, there's quite some difficulty in implementing an engine that is quite capable of doing that rendering, so they basically fall back on something that they know will work, but is actually, again, just as unsupported. And then I'm wondering, but what am I buying then, if you're just doing like Word conversion, because I could write a wrap around that, probably myself, so not a whole lot of value. But it's still a problem that people haven't really tackled just yet. So I'll just go ahead and show you later on how you can tackle that using, well, new SharePoint 2010 technologies, which I find very exciting. Typically, my OpenXML story always went like this. We have OpenXML. Yay! And then you guys say, yay! Exactly. It's only like a 20% yay here, but still. But you say that, and you say, hey, we have data binding. Yeah, awesome. Very cool. And always you get the question, Wouter, can we print that? And then it's always the next question, right? And the OpenXML story was, of course, quite valuable in itself. But that last step, that was always something that was quite unattainable. And now we can actually take that last step. So first of all, let's go ahead and take a look at a document. Let's take a look at OpenXML a little bit. So how many of you would consider themselves to be somewhat fluent with OpenXML? That's none of you. Have any of you ever opened up an OpenXML document? Okay, that's okay. Then at least I've got something sensible to show you guys, because if you would all be experts, we might as well skip over that stuff, right? So for me, a document, it's a little bit like the jack-in-the-box, right? You could crack it open and stuff appears, so you can do things. And that is, of course, very exciting. You can, of course, go ahead and you can take a look at a document. So let's go ahead, open Word. Let's go ahead and create a new one. And we could say something like equals lorem. And there we have this one. And then you could, of course, do the save it out stuff. And people always amazed that if you go ahead and push it out on disk, then here we have it. And we could rename it into zip. And then we have, hey, it's a jack in the box. It's stuff in there. Yay, that's nice. And even what's even nicer is that it's actually following a standardized format for structuring your zip. And that format is actually used far outside of OpenXML. XPS documents make use of that. And did you know that VSIX, Visual Studio Extensibility stuff, may have shown you that a little bit earlier this week, is also using the same packaging format. It's kind of like a compound document, right? A compound format where you can push stuff in and you have it all identifiable and locatable. So that's kind of an interesting thing because, of course, your document is made up of styles and of headings and of the body and all these different notions that you may want to go ahead and locate quite easily. So you can browse around in your document. Here you have your document.xml. And, of course, there is my paragraph. So the structure is that you have a body. The body consists of a paragraph consisting of a run, which is basically a piece of formatted text, like text that's bold or italic. It's always a single run. And then you have your T elements, your text elements inside there. And basically that is how you, well, can start to program documents by just making it in that structure. So that is, of course, a very exciting aspect of what you can do with a document. And, of course, now we need to have some form of API to start basically working with these documents. And, of course, these APIs are quite available. Already very early on, we had the usage of the packaging API. If you take a look at how you would typically use that, is that you would typically, well, perhaps create a console application, right? And inside the console app, you would say, okay, I want to go ahead and make use of these structured type of documents. It's not even OpenXML. And you need to reference the Windows-based DLL, which is a special DLL. And inside that, we had the package class. Then we could say something like package.package, package.open. And let's go ahead and take my document that I have over here. I renamed it to zip, so let's go ahead and rename that back. Catastrophic failure. That does not bode well. Catastrophic failure, renaming a document. Oh, well, you need to have a few of those, right? It's a catastrophic failure where you are allowed to continue. That's kind of neat. So let's go ahead and take the document, copy it out, and let's go ahead and push it in here. And of course, any sensible programmer needs to know that you need to use using statements, right? Dispose of stuff when you're done with it. There we go. And now we could start opening it up, but now you have all kinds of difficulties with working with a document because, hey, there's no notion of OpenXML. Can I get into the headings? No, you cannot. So what could you do? You could actually browse relationships. So you could probably say something like, hey, get me all the relationships of a particular type or something like that. Very abstract. And people could go ahead and be a little bit messy, and then they could say something like get part. And you could say new URI, and because if you're doing it dirty, you would say /word/document.xml, which is actually something that you would need to go ahead and locate using these references. But if you were just quick and dirty like I'm doing right now, you would hard code it into that location over there, word/document.xml. And then I have my part, and your part has a stream. Oh, man. So now we need to say something like using stream reader, reader equals new stream reader. par.getStream, something like that. And now I have my reader, and we could say something like console.WriteLine, reader.ReadToEnd. And if you want to be a little bit sensible, what you do is you take an X document. Here's what I like about X documents, is that you can say XDocument.Parse, reader.ReadToEnd. And if you now do the console.WriteLine of your X document, you actually get formatted XML back, which is, of course, much easier to look at. And there you have your document as an XML file. So now you program stuff. Yay! Of course, quite difficult to do. And you need to know quite a bit of OpenXML to become productive, right? Because you need to know about all the structuring. You need to know about packages, about relationships, about all the different identifiers that you do. Because get relationship by type. What type? Well, look it up in the spec. Well, what spec? Oh, you downloaded it at ECMA. Ah, dude, I just need to program like this single constant control. Why is this so difficult, right? So what basically happened is that there was this new invention called the OpenXML SDK that basically leverages all of this stuff, and the OpenXML SDK allows you to do that in a much more fluent manner. So what you can do is you can add a reference into document format.openxml, and using this SDK, you're no longer using packages, which are very abstract, but you're using something like a word processing document, right? So word processing document is word processing document, no, word processing document.open, and we take the same name as over here. And then you can see that it's actually so much easier to go ahead and use this. So we'll say open, and we'll say that it's read and write. And if you now take a look at your document, you actually have something called the main document part. So that's basically the same as your package part over here. It's only using relationships, reading stuff out like the way that you should. And it's, of course, a much easier model where you can say main document part, main part, or something like that. Of course, we still have the whole notion of getting to the data. So we still have the get stream if we want to go ahead and use that. So this was basically the OpenXML SDK 1.0 and 1. Well, whatever community technology preview had this level of construct, right, where you have strongly typed parts, where you could say, okay, there's a main document part, there's an image part, there is all these different parts inside the document. And, well, basically, that's where it left off. One thing that you didn't get was XML level. So you still need to do load it into an X document, and from your X document, you have it, and now you need to program XML and XPath, and you need to know namespaces, and it all becomes quite painful quite quickly again. So the latest OpenXML SDK allows you to go ahead and say, no, my document actually has got XML in it, but now let's go ahead and create strongly typed elements, strongly typed classes. And basically it allows you to go ahead and do something like this, where we can say document.pair or .addChild or appendChild, what's it called? AppendChild, sorry. And what do you want to go ahead and append? I want to append a new paragraph, so we can do something like that. And in my paragraph, I want to add a new run, and I want to add a new piece of text into that. So you do need to know a little bit of the XML structure, right? So it's not like you can be totally oblivious yet. It's not at the same level of API as you do have inside Word. In Word, you would say range.txt equals this, and then it would make paragraphs for you if it would need to have paragraphs. But still, it is, of course, a lot easier to do this, and it allows you to use a little bit of that link composition model where you can add objects into objects using the constructor. Then that's a little bit of productivity that you get out of that. And this allows us to program documents in a, well, much easier way than we could before. So we could get that one a go. It, of course, has no UI, so it doesn't really show any interesting results. But if you go ahead and open up the document, it's being used by another process. Let's see why that is. Oh, wait, it's over here. I'm not paying attention. We can see that we now have added a paragraph in there using just a few lines of code, right? So if you take a look at productivity that you can now get into working with documents, you basically have this OpenXML SDK that knows about Office 27 and 2010 file formats and allows you to program it in a quite a natural way. There's still a certain level of OpenXML knowledge that you do need to have, so it's still following that basic structure. But what we can now do is you can, of course, build another layer on top of this. So you build, of course, layers upon layers. So first of all, we have the packaging stuff. That's all done. That's all stable. Let's go ahead and build the next level. That is, of course, strongly typed parts. Now that is stable. Let's build XML abstractions on top of that using class notations. What we can do with that is, for instance, use link. And I'll show you a little bit of that in a minute or two, where we can use link to query documents to push data into specific locations using a single line of code still. So that's definitely interesting. And of course, the next layer that will appear either by Microsoft or by community is that we're building on top of this, where we can say, add a paragraph with this text and don't make me think about the fact that you need to have a run and a text element on that. Just go ahead and make it for me. Or you might be able to say, I have a chart over there, push it in there. Just go ahead and make it into a single method call, right? So we can go ahead and build that stuff out and all the information that you need for that. And I think that's quite amazing. It's all in the spec, and it really is. I've been part of the ISO committee that standardized OpenXML here in Holland. And first of all, very much fun to be part of that. But there was criticism that the spec was too big. There's too much information. Have you ever seen a developer that is saying, oh man, it is so painful. I no longer need to figure stuff out myself. So boring. Don't really like it. I'd much rather press F5 50 times until it works, or now I need to read about how it works and then do it okay the first time. A little bit stupid, right? So I found it amazing that it's all in the spec. Office SharePoint 2010, great specs, great documentation, right? SharePoint 27, not as much so. So I was actually expecting the same level of, well, a little bit of non-documentation going on over there as well. But it's just all there. It's all described, including samples on how you use it and how it should render. So you have a lot of, well, ground to work from. It's very easy to find out how you can go ahead and learn about these documents. So let me go ahead and show you some of the interesting things that we can then do with that. And this first demo I want to go ahead and show you is something that I'm actually not really certain on if it will be or will not be supported by the time that Office RTM will hit. But I'm going to show it you anyway. I cannot help it because I find it to be very productive and very capable. And perhaps I'll create the same demo using content controls later on. So what is this all about? Well, basically, if you have a document, of course, your document typically has got data and stuff like that. So one of the things that you could do in Office 27, and it has recently been removed out of Office for, well, some legal constraints, and how that's going to pan out, I don't know, if we're going to add the same level of features later on to other areas of Office. What you could do is you could take an XML file and map it onto your document, and you could say, well, this piece over here, that is that part of my XML file, and that table over there, that's mapping to a repeating element. And every row is, of course, one of those repeating elements. The first cell is the first child element of that, and basically go ahead and do that mapping that way. The nice thing about how to do that is that you could actually go ahead and write like a few lines of code to both embed data and extract data out of it. So I first of all have a demo over here, and it's basically using OpenXML, and it's I think it's not really using the SDK. I'm just doing straight up XML programming using XPath and using all that kind of stuff. So this is a little bit of an older demo that I have, but it's actually generic code. It works for every document out there, and that's of course what excites me, and that's why I want to show you that it's actually quite easy to embed data in there. And for the European market, I believe it was still supported, so I'm in the right location here, right? So I can still do that. That's kind of nice. So I have some generic code over here. I've got my XML file with data over here. Just to go ahead and show you that it's really live and it's really working, let's go ahead and kick this one off, go ahead and make it run. And we now have basically a document that has that data embedded in it. So we have new.docx. There we have black stripes. It has embedded it all. And this would work on any document, any table. Doesn't really matter. You can just go ahead and use that single piece of code, which you can find on my blog. And now you can actually also go the other way around. So we can take this document over here. I move it into my extract data. And in my extract data, what we can basically do is the same thing, only it's even easier. We have a single XSLT file of about 15 lines of XSLT. And this 15 lines of XSLT is basically going to go ahead, query the document, and get the data out of there. And this time I'm using a bit of OpenXML SDK to get my strongly typed parts, to get to the main document part. Then I'm using it as XML, because then I can use XSLT to do the extraction. And you can see it's like 5 lines of code here, a little bit of XSLT there. There we have a black pencil still. Hey, that's not what we're supposed to see. Wait, let me go ahead and delete the bin folder here, which is, of course, locked by whatever it is locking. I don't like the errors that I'm seeing. So you see, you have errors that you do like. It's like, yeah, you made a boo-boo-boo, no reference, yada, yada. And then you have, like, well, the one that you just seen, and this one is kind of funky, too. The system call level is not correct. The system call level, I don't even know what it is, but it's empty now, so that's okay. We can rebuild this one. And just to be sure, I'll also ensure that I have my latest new.docx override it, please. And then we can go ahead and give it a go again. Oh, of course, and then it fails on me. This could not find file. That was to be expected because Visual Studio is no longer copying it down. So there we go. Copy always. I believe I configured that earlier on as well. So now we have, and there's my black stripe. So yeah, it's all working. So you do see that it's going to be very easy to start embedding, extracting data out of that, and actually have demos using this technology. I have demos using content controls and the many other technologies as well. So let me go ahead and show you the next thing. And that is content controls, which is a little bit of a model flowing out of this whole idea that if you take a look at a document, it has both, well, normal information like paragraphs and runs, and then you have added semantic information about, well, this paragraph, that's a customer name, so you need to know that, right? So that semantic level of information, you could use both custom XML that I just shown you to go ahead and do that mapping. The difficulty with custom XML, though, is that the mapping cannot really be locked quite easily. So you have the issue that if you have users and they open a document, they can throw away the mapping for you. And then, of course, if you throw away mappings, then, well, failing, of course, flows out of that. But content controls allow a whole new level of interactivity with a document. And you use that using the developer tab. And then you have your content controls over here. And basically, these have, well, tags applied with my tag. And I'm basically going to start embedding some data in these content controls just here. So in order to do that, what I have is a little bit of link code using the OpenXML SDK. So what I have over here is I'm going to open up my document using the Word Processing Document class. That's, of course, a model of Word documents. Well, Word Processing Documents, because you can offer them outside of Microsoft Word, of course. Next, I have one method to go ahead and push data into the My Tag content control and in the other content control, and we're pushing some silly sentence in there. So let me go ahead and show you how you do that. First of all, you need to go to the right content control. And if you take a look at what a content control is, it is something called a structured document tag inside the SDK and inside the OpenXML standard. So the OpenXML standard has got, of course, definition for all the different elements inside OpenXML. And the SDK, I haven't really picked the right highlighting color, guys. Sorry, it's much lighter on my screen here, and I forgot to check it out for you. But basically, we have an SDT element that, of course, corresponding to the SDT element inside the SDK and inside the spec itself. So how do you get to a specific structured document tag? Well, basically, that tag, if you open it up, you could open it up in a reflection tool to see how that XML is looking. And one easy tool for you to use is, for instance, to use a tool that is shipping with the SDK. So we can go into Program Files, OpenXML SDK, and go into the Tools folder. And here we have a nifty new tool, the OpenXML SDK tool. It's kind of a lame name, but it's a nifty tool. Perhaps they should have named it the OpenXML SDK nifty tool. But then it's quite a long name again, so that's also not as pretty. So we can go into my demos where I have my OpenXML, my content control demo. And if you now see your document, you can basically peek inside of it. And you can take a single XML file over here. And, you should be able to also explore, right? It doesn't explore. Well, I'm going to cheat a little bit. I'm just going to go ahead and compare it against something. At least then I get my document.xml that I want to show you. View partif. So if you go into the XML, you can see that there's my structured document tag, SDT. And you can see that there's a child node, SDTPR. And OpenXML is a little bit cryptic in that. It is not structured document tag as a name. It's SDT, SDTPR. PR, of course, stands for properties. And why did they do that? It's all kinds of optimizations, right? If you take a look at a large document with lots of XML elements, you want to have short names so that it is opening a little bit faster using less memory. It's not going to be a whole lot, but every little bit helps, right, to make it into a performance system. So we can see it's SDTPR, and then we have the tag element where we have the val attribute with my tag. So now at least you know a little bit about how you can find that document tag. So what you can do in code, you can say, okay, from the document, the root node, get me all the descendants of SDT element type. And I want to get off that list of SDT elements, I want to have the first one that basically has a properties element, which has a tag element, and a tag element must be having a value containing the tag that I'm pushing in over here, which is of course corresponding to my tag or other. So that's a single link statement that you need to update that particular area. And it's not a super complex link statement. How many of you are familiar with link and using that quite often? I do. I love it, basically. I think that is one of the key technologies to become a more productive developer. If you just look at, well, your code constructs and, of course, APIs that you use is, of course, also a benefit. But in terms of, well, basically learning a little bit better C#, that's definitely something to learn. So we have this single element here where we can get into our structured document tag. Of course, if you don't have it, we fail it out. Next, I'm going to go ahead and say, let's go ahead and remove all the showing placeholder elements. If you open up the SDK in the spec, you can read about the fact that your structured document tag, when it's showing a placeholder, click here to put in content, basically. That is basically indicated by an element saying, hey, it's now showing a placeholder. This content is not live. Don't print it. So you need to remove that notification, basically removing all children. And next, I can say, okay, is this actually something that is at the run level, in line, for HTML kind of type of constructs, or is it a block level? And if it is one of the two, let's go ahead and make it into that thing, get my content out of that, which is another child element containing basically the content of the tag, and I'm going to append either a run and a text or a paragraph and a run and a text. So you see how easy it is to do that, and we can basically kick this one off. We don't get any pretty UI as well. I'm sorry, OpenXML does not allow me to create pretty UIs for you too much. We have pretty UI, it's called Office. It has nice round, it used to have nice round buttons. And now we need to make jokes about square buttons, but square buttons don't make correct jokes, right? Round buttons is nice and shiny. We lost the roundness, oh well. But you can see, here's my structured document tag, that's all still working, we still can get to that. See, it's very easy to go ahead and program that, right? So in terms of creating a template and getting to locations to fill in, few lines of code to do that. Doesn't require a whole lot of knowledge. You don't need to read about headers, about footers, how about all that XML structure, how that works. No, you read about that particular element that you're interested in, and that's about it. And that's where you basically, well, drop it off, and that's where you, well, basically, well, where you focus on, right? So that is a little bit about how you can embed data. Well, basically, there's another technology that you can use. How many of you have seen data embedding, data binding using content controls? That's just a very few of you. So let me go ahead and give you a very quick demo on that as well. I do have a little bit of time left, I think. So what I can do is I can go into Word, and now I have Word over here. We have my content controls. Here I have one, and there I have another one. And what I can do is actually I can embed any XML data file into that compound container called the Open Packaging Convention zip container, basically. So that docx file, that is the container. You can, of course, push arbitrary files in there, right? First of all, you can push arbitrary files in there, and Word will not remove them. So that's kind of nifty, because if you take a workflow and you want to have some information about the document traveling with your workflow, you just push it in the zip and have it travel with it. Very nice. But you can also push some data in there that you could actually have surface inside Office as well. So we can say active document dot custom XML parse dot add. We add in some XML. I'm just adding it as a string using VBA, but you could use OpenXML to embed it. You could use various technologies to do that with, right? Here we just have some data, and we'll just close down the read node as well. So basically, that's in there. If you hit enter, it has happened. If it doesn't fail, it works. So we have content controls. We take the first one, and then we can go into the XML mapping, and we can say set mapping, where we can say, well, this one is mapped to root slash data. So if we now hit enter, and if we now take a look at my my content control over here, you'll see that, hey, it's now saying something, my data. That's cool. So if we now go back and I take my second content control and basically do that one as well, hey, it's also showing my data. It's now bound. So of course, if you now go ahead and change that one, the other one goes as well. It's all bound. And if you take a look at how this is actually persisted inside the document, what you can now do is make it even easier to update stuff by just, let me go ahead and save it out to desktop. That's okay. Let's go ahead and close some stuff down here. And there's my document. And you have your custom XML folder. There's my item one, and that contains my data, right? So it's going to be hugely easy to go ahead and push some data into the document. The only thing that you need to do is look this XML file using the SDK and take your data as XML, push it in there as well. Done. You don't need to learn anything about OpenXML at all to do that. And that's, of course, going to be a huge performance gain. You don't need to know paragraphs and runs and text and all the different constructs that you have inside OpenXML. So very exciting stuff and very powerful. And I think that if you take a look at all our needs, we need to be able to get into that box. And now we have a whole lot of technologies that allows us to do that. So would that excite you, or would you say, that's got to excite you, right? Come on. That's got to be cool. So we've seen a little bit of how you can crack open a document. So I've taken you through some of the OpenXML data stuff. So let's go ahead and cover a little bit of the background of the OpenXML SDK. Well, I talked about most of these things, right? Where you have, first of all, that base layer, system.io.packaging, which I've shown you that it's a little bit difficult to use, but it can also be used for your custom solutions. And that's, again, an entirely interesting aspect. Say that you have whatever. Perhaps you're creating a drawing application. You need to have a file format for your drawing application. You might need to store brushes. You might need to store all kinds of information about that drawing. You can use the same type of compound file, use the same APIs to get to that. And of course, you don't need to write all kinds of low-level tools because you get them inside the .NET framework. So definitely interesting to work with. And next, we have the OpenXML SDK on top of that, where we have both SAX-like reading capabilities and writing capabilities, so more streaming-based, and of course also DOM-based, where you can have full in-memory representations of documents. And one is, of course, very useful for high-performance computing type of thing. High-performance conversion or embedding of data, for instance, will be a good scenario for that. And then you have the full in-memory stuff, where, of course, it's a little bit easier to program, but it's also a little bit more consuming on system resources. So you may need to, well, take either of those approaches. And then we have the next layer, and I think this is particularly interesting. Has any of you ever created an OpenXML document using the SDK or the packaging API, or perhaps by hand using WinZip or whatever zipping tool you have? There's a few of you. How many of you have had Word say, you suck, that's not a document that I understand, you silly, silly dude. It says, error, it's wrong. And then it doesn't say what the error really is. So that is your typical experience when you start to learn about these document formats, right? Especially when you were very early on, no APIs. It's quite easy to make an element, put an element somewhere that Word doesn't understand. And it doesn't always fail in a way that you would like to see it fail. It just fails and it logs something. So that validation of your package, that is super important because it allows you to find out about all kinds of those failures beforehand instead of afterwards. So if you take a look at the OpenXML SDK 2.0, what it will contain by the time it releases, and we already have some of that inside the product right now, is validation. And in terms of validation, I basically built an OpenXML tool called the OpenXML Package Explorer, and it uses the schemas, the XSDs that you can download from ECMA to do the validation for you. Very easy to do. But one thing I couldn't do is semantic validation. For instance, if you go ahead and have an image, The image is inside your zip, it has an ID, and you reference it by ID. So your schema is not going to say that that ID is actually pointing to a valid location, right? It's just going to say it's a valid ID. It is an int, or it is an whatever, it's a string. Yeah, see, it's a string, it's an attribute containing a string, yay. Of course, that doesn't really help you by the time that you open up the document and the reference was wrong, well, stuff fails. Semantic validation is going to help you out in that. Basically, it takes all the little written rules inside the spec, and it takes all those rules, and it's going to map them into code for you, where you can run a validator, and it's going to check all of those little things in your document to see if it is correct. So that it allows you to learn about, well, if your code is actually functioning properly, if your generation is going to be going ahead and going to generate a document that actually can be converted into PDF, for instance. So all of these valuable pieces of information can flow out of that, meaning that you'll have, basically a shorter time to market and an easier time and a little bit less frustration when you start to develop your documents. So we have seen some of these data pushes. So let's go ahead and take a look at some of these added capabilities that we have inside the OpenXML SDK and that you can program without the SDK as well. But just in terms of a little bit of productivity, I've got a nice demo here called Copy Chart. So what is this one all about? Well, basically, you have got all kinds of richness inside documents, right? I particularly like SmartArt. Everybody knows SmartArt? Who doesn't? You haven't seen? It's smart and it's art and it's amazing. What is it allowing you to do? It is allowing you to go into Insert. You can say SmartArt. And one thing I always like to show is this one, where you can say, yeah, how many of you have tried to do the same type of graphic and make it all aligned and have the same angle between all the different bullets? And you do that manually, right? So you use the pixel left, pixel right, and of course, if you take a look at what you can do over here, is you can add any number of those, and it will do the layout for you. So that is SmartArt, definitely super capable. Of course, we have rich charts that we can do. We have all kinds of rich data inside documents that we can share, because this SmartArt is available in spreadsheets, it's available in presentations, inside documents. So what I have over here is, first of all, a simple spreadsheet. So here's my spreadsheet. It's rocket science, as you can see. So let's go ahead and change a little bit of the data so you can see that it's actually working correctly. So there's my chart. It's, of course, bound. And next I have my presentation. That's my presentation, totally empty. And what we can now do is we can write a little bit of code to copy that chart from inside your Excel spreadsheet into the presentation and still maintain the chartiness of it. It's still going to be a chart, right? It's not going to be an image or anything like that. So how do you do that? Well, here's the amount of code that I needed to write for that. That's it. So you see how much easier it is if you have a little bit of background knowledge into how this all functions. I do have a little bit of hacky nature. You have your ID, I hard-coded that to 2. You may need to do a query as to what is the highest ID, something like that, right? But it's just a few lines of code, and it basically needs to push out a little bit of XML, and basically then you're done. And this is only the XML that you need to do to embed it inside a presentation, meaning that this XML is actually specific to presentation ML. So I have that little bit of code. Next, I have a little bit of code to basically find that chart so I can copy it down. And if I now go ahead and run this app, I can go ahead and copy A to B. So if you now go ahead and move into the bin debug and into your presentation, of course. Oh, wait, that was actually expected. There's still a small bug that I hit. It actually repaired it, right? So that's yay for me. Otherwise, it would say, no, not working. But you can see, hey, it's still a chart, right? There you have it. It includes the changed column that I had. It's really that chart. It's not like I pre-cached it or something for you. So that's just a live demo. And you see a few lines of code to do that with, right? So you can start to, well, think about all kinds of interesting, well, configuration and transformation using, well, OpenXML technologies. For instance, people do some charting and do some stuff in Excel. They do some prospecting or some, well, data mining, and basically we need to generate reports out of that, some management presentations, so we can do that in an automated way and not have people, well, do that like as their day job, right? Your job is it to copy the chart from there to there. Yay, that's such a nice day job. I would love to have that. No, let's go ahead and build a solution so I can focus on, well, other stuff, right? Very easy to do. So the next thing I want to show you is the conversion of all of these documents. So if you take a look at all of this, One of the things that you need to envision is that pagination, for instance, is not contained inside a Word document. Pagination is something that is applied as soon as the document is rendered inside a rendering engine, also called Word or OpenOffice or any of these Office products that are out there, right? And they do the rendering, and based on the rendering, they find out that a certain paragraph is at a certain place at a certain page. So stuff like table of contents updates, something that will be outside of the reach of OpenXML. Rendering, outside of the reach of OpenXML. You cannot do that with that technology. It's all about data in a document, not about layout of the document, right? So in terms of that investment, that was a little bit of the gap that you had inside SharePoint 27 and Office 27, that you couldn't take this last step to take your two paragraphs, lay them out, so now you know what, how the document should be printed, right? Because we want to print it out or convert it to PDF for storage purposes or something like that. Of course, everybody wants to do that. So in terms of investments, we now have something called Word Services, Word Automation Services. How many of you have seen the scalable service application architecture of SharePoint 2010? A few. So what is basically, how many of you have heard of shared services in SharePoint 27? Quite a few. Basically that same thing, only extensible and, well, scale up and scale out, all kinds of scenarios you can do with that. And basically it allows you to do Word conversions on the server with 100% fidelity of rendering, which I find to be very important. Because this is not something that people are, well, mindless about. No, there's actually, I've seen applications being bombed, which took quite some effort to build, because they basically rendered a line 5 or 10 pixels below the place where it would be visible inside Word. It's not the same. This is not how it was approved, so we have all kinds of guidelines and mandates and all kinds of things that you need to go ahead and follow, so that was not cool. So 100% fidelity is hugely important in terms of, well, ensuring that what you create actually looks good in print by the time you send it to a client, right? It would be not nice if things just overlap a little bit because some conversion went wrong somewhere. So we can now do all kinds of server-based conversions of documents. The interesting thing, if you take a look at this, is performance. And, of course, stability, scalability, all these things. But if you take a look at how this all works, it's all on the server. There's no UI application. And we can, of course, do a lot more conversions using this technology than doing it client-side in Word, which is not really meant for that type of performance. Because, well, yeah, it's just not designed to do that with. So we'll have Word services, very easy to program, not a whole lot of things for me to do with that. Just a few lines of code and we'll be going with that, so it's going to be super easy to do. And let's just go ahead and do that. Let's see, close some of this stuff down. Save file as. Here, let me go ahead and see if we actually already have PDFs inside the invoice library or not. I think I closed down this tab before it actually went ahead and created the job. So let's go ahead and go into central admin. And I'll kick off the job one more time. So we go into job status, go to schedule jobs, go into the Word automation services timer job, which is performing that conversion. I could run it down into running every minute, but if I do that, of course, my machine is going to hang quite a bit. So that is perhaps not the best idea. So if you can go ahead and wait around here, I'll just do this for a few seconds to see if it's going to go ahead and start converting stuff for me. Otherwise, I'll show you another demo where we basically do a little bit of that same thing, but I'll show you the code that sits behind it and how you can go ahead and drive that capability. Ah, come on, you need to convert some documents for me now. Oh, well, I'll just skip that one. Get back to within a minute, because it, of course, needs to fire up, it needs to start going, and it takes some time to get going, right? So I'll just not go ahead and focus on that. So we have seen some of that. So the next thing is, let's see, what do I want to show you? That one I already did, table of contents. This will be a fun one. So let's go ahead and open this one up. This basically shows you a little bit about how you can work with the automation services of Word and the Word automation services on the SharePoint server. So here we go. What do I have over here? I have a basic document, and this demo works 95%, I must say. So I have a table of contents in there. I've got my chapter 1 containing some text and, of course, not a whole lot of other things in this demo. And next I have here some code that is using the OpenXML SDK to basically add in some extra content. So I'm going to add in an extra paragraph that is going to be a heading one paragraph, adding some text under that, chapter two, add another paragraph, hello world. And next I'm going to start and drive the conversion. So if you take a look at word conversion services, or word automation services as it is called, what you can do is you can, always these darn tooltips. There you are. See? That helps quite a bit to have a lecture desk that is a little bit like that. The mouse goes away into the right location by itself. So if you take a look at how you do that, super easy to do, right? It's not difficult at all. First of all, it always operates on SharePoint. The conversion services are capable of converting libraries, folders, items, but it always needs to be maintained inside SharePoint. Question on that? Can it do save to Word 97 version? Let me show you what it can save into. It can save into a ton of different versions. So we have saveformat.pdf. We have 97 format. There you go. You have them. You have, of course, PDF. But who needs PDF anyway if you have XPS? I don't know why people are using that. That's strange stuff, right? But you can even go into Microsoft HTML. You gotta love Microsoft HTML. Don't ever use that one, please. No, that's we all know MS-HTML, right? It's little. Do you know that SharePoint 2010 actually filters that out? If you do copy paste from Word into SharePoint as a publishing scenario, works. It's amazing. It's no longer that you're gonna get a little bit of crap going on there. But also into the 97 formats. So definitely interesting. So take a look at the scenario where your company is not really yet ready yet or a little bit afraid of moving into the new file format, right? No, we're still using doc for whatever reason that you might have for that, investments and stuff like that. You can do automation. What you can do, it's 100% fidelity. You go to the server, you convert it into docx, you do your modification, you convert it back. No issue at all, right? And you say, well, that takes a little bit of work. Well, yeah, 5 lines of code times 2, that's 10 lines of code. And it takes a little bit of time. It's not going to be like 100% live system. It's all timer-based. But hey, who cares, right? That's not the main issue. The main issue is that you couldn't do this, and now you can. So what we're basically going to do is we're going to drive that conversion. We're going to say, okay, the current user is going to be the one that is performing that task inside SharePoint. And here's an interesting setting that you can do, which doesn't quite work yet. You can actually have it calculate all the fields for you. I have seen it working in earlier builds, but then stuff happened in my current build. It may be me, may not be me, I don't know. But what it can do is it can be rebuilding your table of contents. It can rebuild or recalculate all kinds of calculated fields like sums inside tables where you do a little bit of summing on, well, the total number of sales or total number of orders or whatever. And that's, of course, going to be hugely interesting that you now have a document. You can take your OpenXML to push in some extra content, convert it out to PDF, and you actually have the latest version that is fully correct and fully updated, right? So that is, I think, an amazing capability. So let's go into my environment here. That is the wrong browser. This is the right one. Just to check, do we have PDFs here? Still not. That's probably my bad. So I'm going to push it out into the shared document library. So this one, it will be another one of, so let's go ahead and give it a go, and then we need to start doing the conversion again. Let's not go into that. Let's go into PDF and give this one a small go. Of course, compilation errors. Makes total sense. Oh, yeah, there's a little bit of a bug inside SharePoint, the beta 2 that we're using, and that certain DLLs from off SharePoint server are compiled against the wrong version of the system.web.data visualization, and then either this one fails or that one fails. And of course, if you open it up in Visual Studio, it's going to tell you that that's an error, and yada yada. And you can easily work around that, so now you know, by going into Program Files x86, go into your chart controls, and go into your assemblies, and then reset the reference to data visualization. And that should clear things up quite nicely. There we go. Yeah, it is blogged, so it's now known to everybody in the world because it's blogged. Don't you have like a direct interesting blog post line that's feeding straight into your laptop? Doesn't matter what you say, it's always coming here. So that is done, that is converted. So we can actually see that in the library over here where I have my document. we can open it up and you can see that the paragraph is actually added into that document. So here we have chapter 2. And so that's all working. Of course, my table of contents hasn't been updated by my code just yet. So now we can go into central admin and basically kick off that conversion job. So let's go ahead and show you that it actually can convert stuff, because currently it hasn't converted anything just yet. That would be such a shame. So let's go ahead and run that one. And let's go back into Wingtip Server, share documents. And now we need to wait for a second or two. And there we go. Hey, something appearing. So we can open that one up and boom, there you have it. Table of contents didn't update. It should have, but it hasn't. Sorry. But you can see that you get full fidelity rendering of that document, and now you have it as a PDF on the server. And why is PDF important? If you take a look at, of course, how a PDF is structured versus how OpenXML word processing ML is structured, it's all flow layout versus fixed layout. It's kind of like HTML, right, where you have fixed layout as well. Nobody uses that. It's difficult to go ahead and have pretty sites if you go ahead and not make it dynamic. But now you can have basically text where you know that this pixel is in that location, so now you can send it to a printer and have it print. So you can do server-based printing on XPS and PDF files, and of course you can drive that using, well, all of these technologies. Question in the back.
Which version of PDF is it?
Which version of PDF is it? PDF. I do not know. Bart, would you know the version of PDF it's using?
1.7 would be my guess.
1.7 would be your guess, but... If there's a hyperlink in the document... Okay, that is interesting. If the hyperlink works, it's PDF 7. Okay, we'll need to test that one offline, right? That's going to be a funky one. But more than willing to check it out for you to see exactly what it is, if that's important.
Important. Yeah,
I would say so.
On the back of that question, what we're actually looking for is PDF A, which is the archival versions, which is for regulatory purposes, compliance purposes.
Yeah, I understand. So the importance of having PDF A for archival. Now, that is well understood. I just haven't checked yet what it is currently using, so I still need to go ahead and see exactly what version of PDF it's going to push out there. I would expect it to be PDF-A because it would be...
As far as I know, it's not yet.
But that's something I just haven't checked yet, so I'd be more than willing to ask the product teams for you to see what it really is and get you the information, right? So very exciting things. We can easily go ahead and take documents. We can easily push in data. We can easily convert that stuff using almost no effort at all. And that's, of course, going to be a very exciting prospect if you take a look at all of these things. So the next thing I want to go ahead and show you is the following. Let's see what I have over here. Oh, actually, this is something that we should not have. Let's go ahead and I need to fix this one for a second. What I'm going to do is I'm going to use another technology that is part of SharePoint Server, which is the Excel services, of course, introduced already in SharePoint 27. And it allows you to go ahead and calculate documents on, or calculate spreadsheets on the fly. So you have the Excel calculation capability only pushed out into the server. So you can now go ahead and drive that calculation capabilities from inside web parts and inside various other locations. And now in 2010, what we have done is there is a new capability there using REST APIs to access that information. So what I'm going to go ahead and show you is a demo on working with Excel REST. So I have that one over here. And for that, I have my state ranking report. So what is this report all about? Basically, it contains a chart. It contains some performance numbers, or at least some numbers about certain states. And the numbers are all being pulled from over here. So it doesn't have a live data connection. It's just data inside the spreadsheet. But live data connection would also be supported. And we could, for instance, say that... We want to go to another state, so that might be AK. If you use AK, you can see that thing updating over there. And now, of course, we need to start accessing this information outside of Excel, but we do want to have it calculated live. So in order to do that, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this document and push it out into this document library over here. So let's go ahead and take this one and save it out as an XLSX. There we go. The first interesting thing that I do want to show you quite quickly is that you, of course, now have the Office web applications where we can take this document, view it in the browser using, well, an equal amount of fidelity. And that, of course, is going to allow you all kinds of rich, well, working with documents in ways you couldn't do before without actually needing to have Office installed on the client. So there's my chart. I have my report card where I can push in some data. And of course, that allows me to go ahead and, well, take a look at and work with this Excel spreadsheet right inside the browser, right? So the next thing I want to go ahead and do is I have my demo on working with Excel REST. So let's see, that's one over here. So what is actually, no, that's not a solution file. It's an Excel file. We need to have that one. So what I'm actually going to go ahead and do is I'm going to use that charting data that, well, a sales guy probably has pushed into the system. Let's go ahead and open up my project. Does it open it up? Yeah, there we go. So I'm going to go ahead and start calling into the server, calling into that Excel spreadsheet using the Excel REST API. If you take a look at the REST API, it is something that is, well, quite easy to go ahead and develop against. What I have here is a class called the Report Builder, and what it's on the Report Data Manager, I should say. And what it's actually going to go ahead and do, it's going to call into the Excel REST endpoint, which is located under your ISAPI folder, and then the Excel REST.aspx. And what you basically do is you push in the name of your spreadsheet, something like /share documents/my spreadsheet.xlsx. And then you can use all kinds of constructs to basically say, out of that spreadsheet, get me a particular chart. And oh, from that chart, I do want you to go ahead and fill in the field named state with a particular value so you can really push in some data, which is not going to be persisted into the XLSX, but it's just going to be used to drive the calculation, and later on it will be scratched and thrown away again. And then you can get some live calculated data back out of Excel. And you can actually go ahead and use Atom to push it down into the client. They have an HTML feed, and charts will be pushed down as images. So what I'm going to go ahead and do, I've got my template document over here, and the template is first of all going to contain the name of that particular state that I'll be hitting, and it also contains an image where I'm going to push out the chart with all the nice calculated numbers. So I'm going to push that out, create some bunch of OpenXML documents, throw them into SharePoint, and then I'm going to convert them all to PDF so we can go ahead and start, well, sending them out to clients or doing whatever. So just a few lines of code to call into the REST APIs. So first I'm going to go ahead and say, get me all the states out of that document, which is just basically the list of states, WA and for Washington, stuff like that. And then per state, I'm going to say, get me the title. So that's another simple query. And get me that image as a byte array. And basically, the only class that you need to use in order to do that is going to be a client class, which is a web client, which is part of the .NET framework inside the system.NET namespace. So it's going to be a super easy class to use just to do HTTP-based calls, get some data back again. What I'm then using is a little bit of OpenXML programmability to actually get into a particular content control, SDT. This demo still uses Link2XML to do the programming. It isn't using the SDK 2.0 just yet, but it's, of course, the exact same notion that you have. Here you see that showing placeholder again, what I showed you earlier as well. And next, I'm going to have the report converter, and that converter is basically going to go ahead and upload your document into SharePoint and create that conversion job so it's ready to be converted. So this is basically going to use all these various technologies together to first of all go ahead and, well, create some rich Word documents based on Excel data. And next, it's also going to go ahead and perform the conversion into, well, a static layout format, well, nice, purposeful for printing, right? So let's go ahead and check out my browser, because it should start to push out some documents in here. You see it's not going lightning fast. Actually, it's going a little bit slower than usual. Usually it would be done already, but hey, that's what always happens, right? How many states does America have? 51. Why so many? Couldn't they just make one state? Wouldn't that be much easier? So much better for demo. Have one state. There we go. No, it's almost done. I could do the demo on state level, indeed. And then, but then you have provinces and stuff like that, right, to worry about. It's always so difficult. Now you're done with provinces, and then they say cities or something like that. Strange concepts. We should make it into a single world and be done with all the issues, right? So come on, I don't have any lame jokes anymore. I'm not that funny. I should probably have programmed some ASCII art or something to go ahead and entertain you while this is going. Have you guys ever seen the ASCII art contest and stuff like that? Have you ever seen the obfuscated C code contest? Who has ever seen that? That's just amazing fun. Where you can write C code that actually does something, but if you take a look at the code itself, it's actually, well, in a certain shape. So you might have some code that looks, if you take a look at a text, looks like a moon. And if you run it, it actually goes ahead and calculates live the position of the moon right now, using code that you actually couldn't understand if you look at it. So that's why it's obfuscated, but it's kind of fun, right? So I have generated all of this stuff. So there we have all my documents. So that is all correct. And of course, now we can kick off that conversion job again. And let's go ahead and check job status, go into schedule jobs, search for Word. That's the quickest thing to do. And basically have it run now. And then we can go back into my shared documents to see if it's actually going to go ahead and do something. So this is also taking a second or two to fire up. But it's going to fire up and then it's going to get me some documents back. There we go. Boom. And you see how fast it's going. There we go. This is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We already have a bunch of PDFs. And there we have most of them. If we now go into the next page, oh, these are all converted. Next one, all converted. And the last one, perhaps, all converted. So that's about, well, 51 documents in like a few seconds' time. So that conversion is going hugely fast. And we can open it up. And you do have the development report card for Virginia. We have the numbers for Virginia here as well. So that is all live calculated and correct. And you'd be able to get to that chart. You would, of course, also be able to get to the data itself. But I'm choosing to push down the chart and not the full data. And that's, of course, going to allow me to do all kinds of, well, super fast conversions, including rich calculated data. So this is basically, I think, the last thing I wanted to show you guys, right? Where we have both capabilities in the Word rendering engine that is now available on the server as a component that you can drive in your custom solutions. We have the Excel calculation engine that is being pulled out on the server where we can easily go ahead and integrate with that using both server-based APIs. I've got a demo on that as well. And also using REST APIs. And we actually have JavaScript object models where we can do all kinds of client-side in-browser interaction with sheets and all kinds of stuff. So definitely very interesting, very capable. Yeah, I think this is basically going to be the last step that I want to show you, right? So we have seen all of that. In terms of feedback, please fill out the eval forms. Very important to us. I hope I've been able to show you some of the rich capabilities of Office and SharePoint and how you can combine them into rich solutions. If you're ever interested in OpenXML, I've got questions on that, or you need to know a little bit more background, feel free to contact me on my blog. I've been doing a lot of OpenXML work, so I might be able to point you into the right location or might give you some direction for your solutions. In the meantime, thanks for your attention and hope to see you again. Thanks.